I only recently learned that Fanny Crosby was a distant relative of Bing Crosby. When Fanny Crosby was only 6 weeks old, she developed a bad cold, so some well-meaning people applied mustard poultices to her eyes. Fanny later believed that this folk medicine treatment damaged her optical nerves because she was blind for the rest of her life. Even so, Fanny Crosby went on to write more than 8,000 poems, which were set to music both as hymns and gospel songs. She eventually became known as the Queen of Gospel Songwriters. Since publishers didn't want to have too many songs that were written by the same person, Fanny quietly published under 200 different names. Her fertile mind also produced 1,000 secular song texts, including political songs, patriotic songs, love songs, and even a few cantatas for good measure. Fanny Crosby taught at the New York Institute for the Blind, becoming an advocate for the blind. She was the first woman to address the joint houses of Congress, and that gave her the opportunity to request financial support for educational institutions for the blind. She became a Baptist missionary and lay preacher, and she later associated more with the Methodist Episcopal Church and was strongly influenced by the Wesleyan Holiness Camp Meetings. The most striking phrase in this gospel song reads, "He hideth my soul in the cleft of the rock that shadows a dry, thirsty land." This image comes from Exodus 33. In the story, Moses is leading the Jews through the wilderness. Now, he was not your ideal tour guide, since the trip requiring weeks symbolically consumed 40 years. But during those long years, according to the story, Moses wanted concrete proof that his God existed. And so Moses asked God to let Moses see him. According to the story, God agrees, but says that since the brilliance will be too great for any human to behold, God would hide Moses in a cleft in the big rock, protecting Moses by covering the cleft with his hand in such a way that would give Moses a sense of God's presence. Thousands of years later, poets came to think of Jesus mystically offering that same kind of safety to Christian souls as they face their lives in their dry and thirsty lands. I remember singing this gospel song in church as a child in the 1940s and early 50s in one of Ohio's so-called old Mennonite churches, meaning we followed some of the old ways of the Amish Mennonites. Back in those days, we were singing mostly gospel songs, always unaccompanied. There were no instruments in the sanctuary ever. I had not yet heard the phrase in unison because we always sang in four-part harmony. We did not have brass instruments and timpani supporting us, as we hear in this version from England, but that didn't matter because our hearty singing was rich and full as we raised our voices in those very plain rectangular box-like church sanctuaries made of wood and plaster. We had no curtains, no carpets, no drapes, and certainly no padded pews. Those plain but packed country churches just seemed to amplify our amateur voices. And for a grade school kid, singing gospel songs with some 100 adults was the highlight of an otherwise interminable worship service.